Three, two, one.
Oregon is across.
Let's try cut two. Three, two, one.
Oregon is at a crossroads. We are faced with more ballot measures concerning highly emotional issues than we've ever faced at one time. As a result, many very serious issues are not being discussed, actually being ignored. Well, it's time we start talking about more than measures 6 and 11, and that's what I will do today. Like tax relief, the death penalty, and land use laws, workers' compensation has been around for a long time. I recall looking at a publication from the 1940s that listed major issues the Oregon legislature faced then. You know what they were? School finance, property tax relief, and workmen's compensation. We still face these problems. During the 1977 legislature, we made some major improvements. But even though we made these improvements, Oregon employers still pay the highest rates in the country. Abuses of the system still go unchecked, and a great deal more remains to be done. We all recognize there are about three major problems that plague the present workers' compensation system. First, inadequate policing of the system allows dishonest workers to take advantage of it, literally creating another welfare program. Second, delays in the delivery of rehabilitation services means injured workers who need help do not get it when it does the most good. And third, the high cost of the system to employers force many of them to forego hiring additional people. But if we know what's wrong with the present system, then why has so little been done to correct it? Why did Governor Straw block Lester Rawls' investigation into these problems? That's a question the governor has failed to adequately answer to my satisfaction. Frankly, we've seen so little corrective action because no one in the governor's office has the guts to dig into workers' compensation problems and come up with viable solutions. It was not one of the governor's priorities in 1977, and it's not one now. Well, I'm here today to warn you that if I'm elected governor, one of my first acts will be to get together with all the workers' compensation insurers to begin a concerted effort to clean up this mess. I will personally head a committee to streamline the program, cut the rates, and make this a rehabilitation program, not a welfare program. I serve notice now that if I'm governor of Oregon, and if we do not get the workers' compensation system straightened out in 2 years, I will take unilateral action. I will do everything within my power to force rate reductions and improve services through tough administration of the law. The state system is the worst offender, but the private insurers too must share the responsibility.
I'll burn the tape tonight. That's Carol too, anyway.
Have you guys done anything at all along the line on welfare at all? Have you gotten into that at all?
Not really.
Okay.
Not too much.
can't run down what I was looking for. I think Vic ought to, what he wants to do now is sort of be above this thing, and I think what you know, the advisable approach is to get him on a philosophical level, start off talking about the situation we find ourselves in today, and it doesn't take him very long to look at the problems of the federal government, the lack of direction, the lack of leadership from the president, from the Congress. We've seen a drift in this state for the past 4 years, of basically drift. Where do we go from here? Take a look at 6 and 11 in a different kind of standpoint of view, is that that 6 and 11 have brought us to a point that it almost really, it matters certainly what's in those bills, but it's what's behind them that's really important. What in the hell were a quarter of a million people, you know, what were they getting at when they signed that petition to put that thing on the ballot, even though it was well known that it was flawed and had problems in it and wasn't properly adapted to the Oregon Constitution?
Protest.
What we're probably seeing is a situation where we're at a tremendous turning point in our system of government, where we're really defining the role and the relationship between government and its people.
The change to a participatory democracy.
Well, that's, you know,
is what they're after, but they're not going to really do it.
Yeah, well, that's what the people are working on.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you have Vic go out and just state it as a, God, he's been in politics for 22 years, to come out and give an impartial assessment of what situation we find ourselves in. Well, you get down to 6 and 11, and without even taking a position one way or another, give it, you know, just leave those alone. Everything's already fixed on that thing. It's obvious that the mood of the people is in pursuit of a different philosophy of government than we have seen exercised in the state of Oregon for the past several years, in the nation's capital for the past several years. The attitude of the people is that there should be some restraint, a little more restraint on government. We don't have to go about with meat acts and whatnot. Somebody's got to take the leadership in this thing, and it's obvious that it's coming, and it's going to come to all three levels of government, not just local government, and that's where 6 happens to aim, but it's going to hit state also, and eventually the federal government. The leadership has to come from somewhere. On this particular situation, the leadership is coming from the people. Nobody in this campaign would be discussing property tax relief or cutting government spending, not if you look at the record of the past 4 years, had it not been for the initiative taken by the people and bringing the question up.
Mm-hmm.
What happens after we're having an election on November? What happens to this mood, this attitude, this crusade that's been bought by the people? I think Vic has got to stress that it isn't going to happen unless the leadership comes from the top. When it works, when you work on the whole federal system, the leadership has to come from the bottom, i.e. the people, through local government, then state government, then federal government. We can't wait on Washington to do it because the track record is there. You can go over the facts and figures all you want. The leadership is not going to come from there. You're going to have to drag Washington, D.C. kicking and screaming in on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
The leadership here has come from the people. What happens with the next administration of the state, regardless of who it is, that's going to help carry this thing through? Number one, you're not going to have anything happen unless the leadership takes the lead. You don't have leadership if you're not taking the lead. And a T administration, the number one allegiance that they would come down on would be in behalf of the taxpayer. He's the forgotten guy. He's the guy who doesn't have a special interest group to lobby for him. He isn't a fat cat. He's too busy working hard to make ends meet to be down here banging on the doors of the Capitol building and try to get some satisfaction and get his 2 cents worth of it. He's the guy, those are the people, those are the people whose concerns have got to be addressed. Those are the people who's, you know, they're going to have the first ear of Vic Atiyah or of an Atiyah administration. Number one, if Vic Atiyah is elected on November 7th, the very first money that he has his hands on is a $20,000 appropriation for a transition period. He ought to make the first step, number one, by cutting that by 25%. And what that does is knock it down to $15,000, which is the level of 4 years ago. you're showing a rollback right off the bat. It's not hold the line, it's roll it back a bit. I've taken a look at it, and I'm convinced that Vic can put together the transition with that, within that limitation without any problem at all. There's no problem. He can do it within the buck, so it's a commitment he can make. Number two, I'd have him say there isn't going to be a pay raise for the governor in the next 4 years.
Okay.
He'll be happy with that.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. Something else that he ought to consider throwing into this is pay raises or increases in compensation for state legislators. Now, I know, Vic, you don't like to throw any cards out your sleeve unless you have to, and I've got a hunch we're getting down to the short hairs on this thing, and if we don't pull as many rabbits out of the hat as possible, and sometimes you have to make commitments to do that. You get to the question of legislating pay raises. I don't know if any of the polls you have seen the attitude concerning the legislature, but I might think that it might be wise for Vic to say that if there is going to be any increase in compensation for state legislators, they're going to have to put it on the ballot, and people are going to have to approve it, because that's one bill I'd veto.
Yeah, he would, too. He said...
Well, just lay it to him on that, and I don't think you make any enemies doing something positive. Well, goddamn, at least here's what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Straub in two legislative sessions. He signed two legislative pay increase bills. You don't have to mention him. That's on the record, and that'll be pointed out. I think that it would be wise for Vic to make a commitment on his own staff expenses in the governor's office. You know, again, I don't know what commitments he has, how far he can go, but I'd say that you'd have to, Christ, it'd be nice if you could say there isn't going to be a pay raise in there for the first 2 years of the administration, and pay raises beyond that will be at the exact same percent as any other state employee. When you take the leadership on something, you have to go to the extreme to prove your point. And if you cut your own people off for 2 years, again, I don't know what kind of commitments Vic has made and what he's looking at. If it's something that you can get in there, it ties in with something you can do without doing anything.
I ran most of these points by him after we talked the other night, and he seemed agreeable to just about everything except maybe the 25% rollback, which we didn't really talk about cutting. He seemed to think he would hold it to what it was 4 years ago, which is the cut. So
Well, they've already budgeted. See, the last session budgeted $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the money has already been budgeted for that transition period, and he can make the commitment right now that we'll turn back 25% of the budget. The first 2 months of the ATIA administration, the ATIA elect administration, is going to, you know, the first money that we deal with, 25% of it, we'll be turning back to the general fund. We're going to try and provide the leadership for all other
states. Yeah, setting an example.
Good move.
You've got to set a good example.
Yeah.
You've got to be the first ones to do it, or it isn't going to be done.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get into this whole business of austerity in government, and it's got to be emphasized that it can be done, that the legitimate needs of state government can be met, and you've got to qualify this. It doesn't matter what happens to 6 or 11. Give a damn which, you know, don't say give a damn, my gracious, but regardless of what happens to either one of them, or if we have either one of them, you know, here's some of the things, you know, this is the direction the state government in Oregon will go under an ATIA shop. I think you've almost got to try and cut 6 and 11 out. And I know how closely 6 and 11 plays on this, but everybody knows where Vic is already, and if you can talk about 6 and 11 in other ways, bring a different kind of approach to what you say about 6 and 11, I think it can be helpful, because what that damn 6 does is really tap the mood of what the people have been saying. We saw the administration in office now ran for election 4 years ago on a platform of hold-the-line budgets and no new taxes. We know what's happened, and that gets into a whole other area of confidence and credibility, and I just, you know, not cut on Vic on this thing. Something else I would suggest is that Vic might, and this is something that not too many people try because it's, I don't know, just because nobody tries it, of maybe throwing out some names ahead of time on the kind of people that would be involved in a Vic ATIA administration. I think number one, of Stafford Hansel as being his guy who from November to January is the budget guy. There hasn't, you know, Staff Hansel, you guys have heard enough about him, and you know that you don't get anything but plaudits for thinking in terms of him. There hasn't been a state budget in the state that's been put together for 25 years that Staff hasn't had a good hand on. He's unanimously respected. Well, what the hell, he was Straub's first appointment, for Christ's sake. you know, Vic again maybe tied in on some deal like that, that he can't go with something like that. We discussed today, they're starting out in the boonies right now. The rumors are going out all over the rural areas that the first thing Atiyah is going to do when he gets in there is fire every one of the state policemen and, you know, start over from scratch. I don't think it hurts a bit for Vic Atiyah. I think it makes him look like a statesman if he says there have been some good people bought into state government in the last few years. An Atiyah administration is not going to be a partisan administration because that's not the kind of government the people of Oregon want. You know, we're trying to, let's try and fuzz this R&D business a little bit if possible. Say that those good people that have been bought in, and I ran two names past Vic today, one of them is Koonsman in agriculture.
Yeah, goes along with him.
Oh, Christ, he's popular in hell out there in the country. And Dick Davis in human resources. Now, that human resources is such a monster, such an octopus, that Vic might have his own idea who he wants in there, but Dick Davis is so well respected that the point ought to be made that there is room for, you know, Dick Davis in a Vic Atiyah administration. Okay, let's go down a little more. You get a little touch here on this one. Public Utility Commissioner. Now, Vic, I believe, supports the creation of a three-member commission.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and again, this is a touchy one, I'd almost come right on out and say that there's going to be a change in public utility commissioners, and I'd do it without taking a rap to Charlie Davis. Say that he's done a good job, that 4 years through that ringer is enough for anybody, and Charlie Davis is probably the first guy to admit it. The debate over energy and that whole thing has become so acrimonious that it's necessary to get some fresh air in there. And you don't mention a name on who you're going to go with. I don't think Charlie Davis has a lot of friends, and I think if you do it by complimenting him, I think if Charlie Davis is quoted, he'll say, you know, I'm ready to go. I don't know if I can last until January. He's on the ropes. He's, you know, he's begging for mercy. I think that that Vic could throw in some names from people he's worked in with the legislature. The name on my list before I knew that Edith was coming out with her deal tomorrow was Edith Green was one of the names of people that Vic would want, you know, to be available to help out on this, that. Not that she's going to be his damn secretary or anything, but, you know, Edith doesn't have time for that anyway. There's people that you can throw in. Hell, I'd throw in, gosh almighty, I'd throw in a couple of Democrats out of the legislature as people that, not that they've been offered any job or anything, but these are the kind of people I'm thinking of. I'd throw in Mike Thorne out of Pendleton, and I'd throw in John Powell out of Halsey. I'd throw in Hardy Myers from Portland, a Democrat from Portland, and I know it's touchy throwing Democrats in, but goddammit, we need a lot of Democrats on this deal. We've got to do a good job with them, and the kind of names I have named, Powell, Thorne, Myers, nobody could be critical of them. They're really solid people. If there's some way, I know the difficulty with, I know what Goldschmidt is doing as far as Straub's behalf, if there's some way that we could put something together, and these are just ideas that I'm running, that if Vic is interested, we can go ahead and develop them. I'd like to find some way to get a positive commitment out of Goldschmidt, and I think I know how to get him. That if Atiyah is elected governor, Neil Goldschmidt, you know, he'll be available to advise in this, that, or whatever the hell it is. So some way we can use him in a positive way. Straub is using him as a gut cutter. I think there's a way we can use Neil, and it softens the edge for a lot of Democrats who get real sweaty palms when they think of Atiyah. They think the caveman's going to roll in there and chop off all the heads. You might consider putting together a list of what you might want to call your transition steering committee. The people that are going to be, that Vic is going to be using for his advisors during that very critical period. You're going to have a state budget to put together in 60 days. You really can't do squat on it now because everything depends on 6 or 11 or neither. You're going to have 60 days to put together a budget for the state for the next 2 years. And it usually takes a year and a half to do something like that. The press is going to judge you 100 days after that. For some reason, they pick 100 days. Brother Straub has taught us that if you don't get off to a good start, sometimes it takes you all 4 years to try and catch up, and maybe he won't make it. Vic might want to think of naming a steering committee of people that, you know, whoever Vic's people are, but people who are good names, geographically well-distributed, do whatever you want. This is going to be the kitchen cabinet on passing the torch to make sure no fingers are burned in the process. It looks like you're doing something. There's something on the death penalty, and I'm just going on this. I'm not thinking for all the Kiwanis business and whatnot. These are just ideas I'm throwing, and you guys grab what you can use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On Vic's thing on the death penalty, he ought to be there. That's where the majority of the people are.
Right.
I think he ought to bring in a new angle on it, because I just I don't like the angle he's using. I think what Vic ought to suggest is that the only reason that thing is on the ballot is because the people have become so frustrated with the need for reform of the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be the only shot they have. When do you ever get a shot on the ballot to vote for something involving the criminal justice system? This is the shot they have. You know, everybody wishes that it was something else that they were voting on, but this is the one that's there. They're going to vote for it only to register their disgust. A lot of people are going to vote for that thing who don't personally support the death penalty, who don't think it will do a thing to, you know, change the situation that we have there. But just to say, damn it, we've had enough. It's time to get tough on this deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Vic ought to say, you know, for that very reason, you know, that's one of the major reasons I'm supporting it, too, because until this passes, no step is going to be made, no legitimate step is going to be made towards the kind of criminal justice reform that makes sense to the people. He's got his pitch on crime, so you can fill in here and there and everywhere. The point is, I think Vic ought to suggest that, number one, if this thing passes, then you think the climate is right in the legislature for approval of legislation where you take a murderer under the terms of that death penalty bill, and he's gone for life. Not 20 years, not 7 years, not 30 years, but life. Life in prison. That's it. When you remove that individual from society, and that's all you're doing with the death penalty, for Christ's sake, you're
mm-hmm.
making sure they don't do it again by sniffing them. I think Vic can almost turn this into a kind of a positive thing that makes him look, you know, makes him look progressive on the issue, saying, you know, you're supporting it, one of the major reasons being because that's the only thing that'll break up the philosophical
yeah.
problem in the legislature to get the kind of protections in there that the people need. If that death penalty thing does break, and it's going to break, it's going to win big, that kind of climate does exist. That's not a fib, and that's...
Yeah.
It would then be possible to put something through in which the people say, well, Christ, we don't need the death penalty anymore. In other words, the guy who's supporting it now looks at it as an avenue to put together the kind of reforms that will be acceptable to the people so we don't ever have to think about the damn
mm-hmm.
thing again. Let's be progressive about it. We visit about state employees today, and as I told you, the word is going out that... through state police, that all the state police are going to get canned. That's only the first shot on that. I figured it would start yesterday, and it's just going to get heavier and heavier among these agency people.
Vic
told
got
me
two
today that he had talked to OSCA, and
yeah.
he said there isn't going to be a slaughterhouse deal down there.
Yeah, he got 2 standing ovations.
Yeah. Well, God, those people are so frustrated as a group.
Yeah.
They can't go with Straub, and if you talk to them the way, you know, God, they're really frustrated there between the devil and deep blue sea.
Al, let me break in for just a second.
Okay.
Our studio time starts in 10 minutes at K2.
So we got to take off.
You better haul out of there.
Yeah.
We're
so a little
late. Work on?
I think
yeah, I've got some good
I think
things.
Got
I think
got some excellent points.
Very good.
You know, you can jazz it up. I haven't had
mm-hmm.
time to write juicy phrases and whatnot. Hey, let me throw one thing to you. I know you got to get out of there. Something that I think Vic can capitalize on in a positive way is this... the anti-California image, the anti-everybody image that we've gotten in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
Through, you know, for whatever reasons, it's not being interpreted in other states like maybe we interpret it as a good joke and whatnot, that we're being viewed as inhospitable, that
mm-hmm.
visitors unwelcome, that the only reason we want anybody to come here at all is to bring their money. I think Vic ought to say that it's time to reverse that attitude because Oregonians aren't like that at all. They're hospitable people. We're all in this damn thing together, be we from California or Oregon or Idaho or whatever. We're all in this together. If we start creating further divisions by doing things that be we trying to be cute or in humor or whatever that foster that wrong kind of impression, well, we ought to do something to square it away and say the first thing that he's going to do if he's elected is to reverse that and let everybody know that the welcome mat is out to anybody. I'd almost
mm-hmm.
go almost so far, and this gets into something that gets into a real touchy political situation, but I'd almost say, and I'll tell you why I do, I'd almost say that the first invitation I'd extend, and it would be a symbolic one, would be to California Governor Jerry Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why I throw that in there. I think Jerry'd like to come up here before this election.
Hi, Helen. How are you?
and it would be an awful lot easier for him to come up if the invite came from a Republican.
Gee, that's an interesting
thing. I think it's possible to, well, I don't know. I've got to talk to some people down there, and I'm just throwing this in to let you know what I'm thinking about. And the only reason why I throw it in is that I think that, I think it's real possible with Jerry coming out here and Fritz, and I wouldn't be surprised if Teddy shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some of Jerry Brown's people, and he's dying to get up here, but he can't come up here in any kind of context that makes him look like he's running for president in 2 years. And goddammit, if a Republican brings him up, you can justify it on the basis that, look, he has a governor, and his top budget officials and whatnot have gone through 6 months ago.
Good point.
Wouldn't that be?
Nobody else in this nation has that kind of experience that can be helpful to us.
Ooh, that could be really
Have him come up and oh, boy.
Well, you bet. And hell, let him come up and have a D fundraiser, but I think the kind of...
The first man I'll bring up.
A press kind of a deal you get off of it comes off real positive.
Yeah.
You please the tourist industry all to hell. They don't like all this bullshit about extra fees for out-of-state campers and stuff.
Yeah.
The tourist people are really nervous, and I think this is one way that, particularly up and down that coast, where you can just sock them on in.
Okay.
You say, let's turn this thing around, and let's put
good
a good face on. Let's be a good neighbor. You bet, you know.
Great.
And think about that Jerry thing and how we could develop that, because I think it's possible that it could happen. He's safe. He's like clam at high tide down there. He's so far ahead.
Yeah,
he could
that's
come up
for
here.
Sure.
He could make Democrat points in a way that wouldn't, you know, that wouldn't hurt Vic Attia, that would only help him.
Yeah.
Because we'd make sure that I'd have that cup of sandbag to be around that snake before we got him up here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
we're going to have to skate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Al, thanks a lot.
Thanks
a lot. Studio.
Okay.
Yeah. If I can record some porno tapes, just give me a call. Keep up the good work, you guys.
Okay.
Bye.
If you have any other ideas, let me know.
Okay, bye.
Excellent. Thanks, Al.
Again, well over 9 months ago. That's the kindest and nicest, and I really ought to quit right there. That's very good. Thank you. I was interested when my brother Richard was introduced. You know, he's the only janitor that's chairman of a board. But I know Richard feels like he is a janitor. He works awful hard in making sure things are straight and clean. I'm almost afraid to tell you this story when you talk about an ecumenical or Catholic story, but I have to. Well, I don't have to, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Heard this some time ago about a monastery up on the hill, and they wanted to expand it, and they didn't have any money. They were building a freeway down at the base of the hill, and they thought, well, they would open up a little fish and chip place down there and raise some money so they could add on to the monastery. So the freeway was finished, and they built this fish and chip place, and they went down there in their habits as they are, and the first customer stopped and looked at this place, the fish and chip, and saw that they were Catholics in their garb. He thought he'd have a little fun, and he asked him, he says, are you the fish fryer? He says, no, I'm the chip monk. What was it that Billy Carter said? I don't know why they're picking on my brother Jimmy. He ain't done nothing. Sorry, folks. There's only two of you anyway out there. I want to talk about the campaign. I want to do it as rapidly because I want to hit the issues as I see them. But I want to make some statements first. We made our contribution expenditure revelation, which we were supposed to do by law. We did it several days ahead of time. And since then, I've seen some things that have been said about by my opponent about me personally. I have to tell you that I resent it, but I resent it more that a governor of Oregon is stooping to such kind of fictitious campaigning and personal attacks on me. I know what he's saying. I'm sad about it. I'm sad because it is a governor that's demeaning himself and the campaign practices of Oregon by so doing. But let me tell you something, because we're going to again make another contribution expenditure comment before the primary is over, that we will show that we have considerably more money than the governor of the state of Oregon is receiving. And when someone asked me about that, I said, yes, we have more money, we have more bumper stickers, we have more window signs, we have more volunteers, and we have more enthusiasm. And that's actually the fact of it. I have never seen in my political career such enthusiastic and huge numbers of volunteers, and that includes the famous Packwood campaigns, as I find in my own campaign. It is outstanding. I can tell you that within our own headquarters, we have developed a list of people who are supporting us, and we have 15,000 names and addresses within our own file. That doesn't sound like much to you, maybe, but in a political campaign, that's absolutely outstanding. I can tell you that we've sent out door hangers that we're going to put out, well over 200,000, and our county chairman are calling back, and they're not out yet, and saying we need more. So they know how many they can get out, and they don't have enough. What I'm saying to you is that there's been an excitement in this campaign that I think is going to be representative of the excitement that we all are going to have in Oregon when I become elected governor. And this campaign is and has been and will continue to be people-oriented, and my governorship of Oregon will be people-oriented. So you must know that my campaign itself is representative of what I would be as governor of the state of Oregon. People who want to be involved are enthusiastically involved and are concerned about their government and the direction the government has taken. But I want to stand back from this whole mess that's going on now, which always occurs at the latter part of any political campaign. I want to give you fact versus fiction. That's what I want to talk about. I want to give you the fact of what's being said and what has occurred between myself and Bob Straub. And when I say fact, not speculation, I think that or I presume that, I'm going to tell you actually what has occurred, either public record or quoted statements in the news media. Fact one, in October of 1977, when the Oregon legislature started, I introduced a bill to return the $170 million surplus that the state of Oregon had back to the taxpayer. I felt that we had overpaid, and that if we did return the $170 million, that is money that the governor of Oregon would not spend. Bob Straub said, quote, "That is irresponsible." Now, I want you to remember that. Fact. I introduced the bill to do that. Fact. He said it's irresponsible. Fact. I introduced a bill in October of 1977 to index income. Now, that's a fancy word to say that we as Oregonians are being clipped because of inflation, both at the marketplace and by our Department of Revenue. Actually, Oregonians paid $140 million more dollars in taxes just because of inflation and no other reason. I introduced a bill to ameliorate that effect, to soften it in any event. Fact, the governor of Oregon made no comment and gave no support to that bill, and we had no hearing on it. Fact, in October of last year, when I announced that I would run for governor of Oregon, I declared many things about my vision for the state of Oregon, but I did say then that property tax relief was the number one issue in Oregon. Fact, the governor of Oregon made no comment on property tax relief whatsoever. Fact, I continue to talk about property tax relief all during the primary campaign and said it was the number one issue, and I proposed a specific plan to deal with it, which also included a limitation. Fact, again, the governor made no comment about property tax, nor did he offer any plan. Fact, in July of this year, when ballot measure number 6 became a reality, I said, I accept the principle of ballot measure number 6 given to us by over 200,000 Oregonians, that I was worried about the language to see if in fact it would work in Oregon. Fact, the governor was quoted as saying that he was against the principle and the language of ballot measure number 6. And let me digress just a second. When I talk about the principle, let's understand what the principle of 6 is. The principle of 6 is a limitation on government income. That's the principle of 6. The principle of 6 is to restrict the skyrocketing assessed value of property. That's a principle of 6. And the principle of 6 is to limit the charge against property at 1.5%. I accepted the principle. Bob Straub said he was against that principle. He did that in July. Fact. After my having talked about property tax relief all these months, and for almost a full year, in August, Bob Straub took a three-day trip throughout the state, came back to Salem and said, August 10th, 1978, please remember this, quote, property taxes are more prominent in the minds of the people than I thought. Can you imagine a more incredible statement from a governor of the state of Oregon just discovering a little over 2.5 months ago that we in fact had a problem? But I have been talking about it for a long, long time. Fact. Question was asked of me, what would you do if 6 and 11 failed? And I said, if they both fail, I will not feel the relief of any pressure whatsoever for holding down government spending and property tax relief. As a matter of fact, I have been talking about it long before a ballot 13 in California and much longer before a ballot 6, and that I would come back with a revised ballot measure number 6, which I've been talking about for a long time. Fact. The governor of Oregon only recently said, when asked the same question, I will not offer any new plan. Now, those are facts that are actual facts, not fancy, not speculation. And I would ask you, who has been most consistently concerned about government spending and demonstrated it more than I have? And I do not believe that Oregonians are going to accept the fact that the governor of the state of Oregon now is the leading champion of holding down government spending and the one that has the greatest concern for property tax relief, because he only discovered both of them. I will not give you a fact, but I will ask you a question. Do you believe that the governor of Oregon would have called a special session for a measure to limit government spending and property tax relief if there had not been a ballot measure 6? Ask yourself that question. I know what I think the answer is. I'm speculating now, but I think you can easily speculate with me. And so that is the fact of what's been happening. I have been talking about not only that, however, but I've been talking about added energy, jobs in Oregon, education for our young people going to colleges, management of our timber, improvement on workers' comp, efficient and effective government, and I've been talking about those things for well over 9 months all over the state of Oregon. I have said that people have heard me, and it was as if they were talking, and that's precisely what it ought to be. I'm asking to represent Oregon and Oregonians, and one does need to listen to them if you're going to do that. But the real issue in Oregon and states all around us is not necessarily the tax revolt that I've just referred to. The tax revolt is merely the symptom, not the disease. A symptom of the lack of trust in the brand of leadership present in most levels of government today. People throughout the country are rising up in an attempt to get the message of the overburdened taxpayer through to every level of government. And the government, in many cases, still is not listening. In Oregon, as in California and Idaho, the people have taken to petitioning their government for redress of grievances. And finally, government officials are becoming concerned. And we need to ask ourselves, why do people have to overreact in order to get government to act at all? But the question here is, what happens after November 7th? What happens if both measures 6 and 11 fail because of the confusion they have created in the minds of people? Will that be interpreted by government officials to mean the people do not want tax relief? As I told you, Governor Straub has already publicly stated that if both measures fail, he will introduce no new tax cut legislation. I'm afraid that the leadership of our state government still has not gotten the message. Well, Venkatia has gotten the message. I've gotten it a long time ago, and I am answering it. I spent the past year in dialogue with Oregonians in every part of the state. I have been in every county in the state of Oregon. I've traveled over 40,000 miles, and I've been in communities as small as Prairie City, and of course the larger communities as well. I have been where Oregonians are, and I've talked to them. And the message is clear to anyone that wants to listen and will listen. And that is less government spending, less government interference, and more response to their needs. Regardless of the outcome of the tax relief measures, what Oregonians really want to know is what they can expect from government 4 or 8 years down the road. Right now, Oregonians aren't sure that the message has gotten through. They're very uncomfortable because the response they're getting from government is the same one they've always heard. Local and state governments are saying, and you've read it, that they're going to cut essential services: fire, police, basic school programs, and basic human needs. It's the same old answer when you complain about waste at the top. Services at the bottom are cut, and the padding and waste remain at the top. That's not the right answer. The only way to get rid of waste and maintain the services is by beginning at the top. So let me tell you what Governor-elect Atiyah will do. From what I've already studied, what steps I have taken, and have studied what I need to do as the governor-elect, immediately upon election as a governor, I want you to know what they will be. First, I will cut by 25% the money appropriated for my use while my staff and I prepare to take over the reins of government. That's not just a hold-the-line budget. That is a direct rollback to the same dollar amount used by the Straub administration 4 years ago. Second, I will order a pay freeze for myself, and that's really starting at the top. Further, no one on my personal staff will receive a pay increase during the first 2 years in office. And after that time, their pay will increase only at the same rate as other state employees. Third, I will hold the governor's staff expenses to no more than that of the present administration. These 3 points are only the beginning, but an honest and out front glance at the beginning of a new era in Oregon government, one in which responsiveness and responsibility start at the very top, and the people are heard at the very top. I promise you that the Atiyah administration will ensure that the legitimate needs of state government are met regardless of the fate of either 6 or 11, that the people's needs are met because government wants to meet them, not because they're forced to meet them. And this is only the beginning, but it represents my pledge to the people of the state to listen, to act, and to provide the kind of leadership and economies of government they really want. I will maintain essential services. I will not make wholesale cuts in state employment. And we will continue to improve our education system in this state. And those statements are documented by my 20 years as an Oregon legislator, because there's nothing in my 20-year record that proves that I want to destroy any part of our government. It's time to stop trying to frighten the people of Oregon. Government spending can honestly be cut in exactly the way Oregonians want it, and starting from the top. It hasn't happened under Bob Straub, but I guarantee you it will happen under Vic Atiyah. Having told you what I have, again, it's a response to the kind of thinking that Oregonians have. It's an understanding of what Oregonians want, and it's a direct, absolutely direct answer to them. Yes, Vic Atiyah has heard you, and this is what Vic Atiyah is telling you he's going to do as governor of Oregon. And what does that mean? That means for the first time in many years that the people's voice will be heard in Salem. There are barriers that have been put up in front of us as Oregonians, deliberately by government. We are being shielded away from our government, and the chasm has grown every day. I have heard all over this state, we the people and they the government. That is something that cannot be tolerated by anyone at any time who believes in this system of government. It's frightening to me to believe that although I have heard in Lakeview and Burns and Ontario and Brookings and Coos Bay and Tillamook and Eugene and Roseburg, all over Oregon, Salem doesn't care. But the most frightening thing is that people in Salem say that Salem doesn't care. And I'm telling you, from my 20 years experience, I have seen this wedge driven between us and our government, deliberately driven. But the sad part of it is that you cannot respond to people if you isolate yourself from people. It cannot humanly be done. And that's why we're in trouble. That's why there is a ballot measure 6. That's why people have to overreact. Because government just hasn't been listening. If we had responded, if government had responded long ago to the voices of people, we wouldn't be in the situation we are today. I absolutely believe what I just told you. And I can tell you this, that for the first time in many, many, many years, you have a clear choice in your selection for governor of Oregon. There is a difference, a significant difference, between Bob Straub and Vicatia. And you have a chance to see that difference put into operation. You have a chance for a breath of fresh air in the state capitol building in Salem, Oregon. You do have that chance. And so this is your opportunity to become elected governor of the state of Oregon. I will be your voice. We will not agree all the time. I know that, and you know that. But you do know your voice will be heard. And so I'm saying to you, this is one chance that you haven't had in years. This is your chance to be elected governor of Oregon. And where it says on my material, it's time for Atiyah, really you ought to say to yourself, it's time for you, long overdue time for you. And when you read in the newspaper on November 8th that Atiyah was elected governor, you can with great deal of satisfaction say to yourself, I won governor of Oregon. And so what I'm saying to you, that if you want to be elected governor of Oregon, you've got a lot of work to do in 13 days. And I think you ought to really get at it, because this is your last chance in a long time to have that opportunity. I want to thank you very much for letting me speak to you. And I want to conclude by saying this. If you like what you hear, and I'm not giving you any mumbo-jumbo or any fancy stuff, I'm telling you like I see it. When I say to you, that means that you have to work. That is exactly what I mean. This will be a close election. If you say to yourself, gee, wouldn't it be neat if Vicatia were elected, then you're not doing yourself or me any good. But if you say to yourself, Vicatia is speaking for me and I want my voice in Salem, Oregon, and by golly, I'm going to work at it, then we will win. And every single vote that I can get is going to be necessary in order to win this seat. Being a salesperson that I am, the one thing a salesman always has to do, and that's to ask for the order. I'm asking both for your help and your vote on November 7th. Thank you very much.
Well, Vic, if you thought Chuck gave you a good introduction, I'll say that's the best speech I've heard you give in a long time. It's a good fighting speech, and we're awfully pleased to have had you here today to give us this message. I think we all are concerned about government, and we're all concerned about taxes and big government spending. And I think you've addressed yourself to it and certainly gave us a message today. Did you enjoy it? I do have to mention this, Senator. Next week, Governor Straub
occupied homes and business, and that the rate against homes would be 1.5%, and the rate against business would be the rate wherever that business is in Oregon, and that's going to vary, but that would be limited. I've said that, well, from the very beginning of when I made a statement in regard to it. I don't agree, really, the kind of fear that people put up in terms of both the power and the ability of business to deal with it. I'm not saying they're helpless, but I'm saying to you that they're not more powerful than anyone else. And I believe, as Governor of Oregon, as I make that request to the legislature, and because of the dramatic difference in the price tag between a 6 as it's passed and the one I just described to you, and the fact that we have to live in both state and local governments, that we will be able to do it. And I don't think business can thwart that at all. They know where I stand on it. It's been very clear. And I think my relationship with them, I think this case might be helpful. They've already indicated some displeasure, but I said that's the way I feel, and that's what I believe in, and I'm going to stick with it. Yes.
About how long of a legislative process do you propose that it will take to make the changes?
Okay. The question was, how long a process do I presume? Let me first tell you that it seems to me that, as I look at it now, sometime late November, early March, we as Oregonians will be voting on it in a special election. But let me back up from that one. The problems in 6 are pretty clear. They've been clear to me for a long time. They've been pretty well publicized. You know what they are. And so the legislature, I think, has moved rather rapidly in making those changes. Remember now, the Oregon legislature in special session came up with a whole new idea in a week. So if it came up with a whole new idea in a week, no doubt I'm well with the majority clearly describing problems with 6 that we can be able to deal with rather rapidly. So the legislature needs to make those amendments, and then it becomes a mechanical process. And I really should look it up at the time to get ballot statements in and voters pamphlet printed and that kind of thing. So I'd say maybe February, early March. Yes.
Mr. Atiyah, I'm Nancy Nelson. You and I have met before. I work for motor vehicles. We heard recently that if elected, you propose to cut all state agencies by 10%. Would you clarify this, please?
I'm glad you asked the question. I went, the intent of the answer was, you said, if 6 passes, what would you do? And I said, I didn't like what California did. It seemed to be a very punitive action, like you folks made a dumb mistake and we're going to try to punish you for it. But I didn't think that Oregonians wanted to kill off anything. So I said that what I'm looking for initially is kind of a uniform, we all tighten our belt a little bit. I said, like 10%, but I always said, that's not a precise formula. That it's just, I want to say uniformly, we would all be treated the same. That would be local government and state government. We're in this battle together, and let's not try to pick out one and be punitive with a whole agency. So that's the clarification of it. 10% was, for instance, I've always said that's no precise formula, that the formula is uniformity. Do it as uniform as we can. If snowmobile is severely hit, and no agency, I say agency, we're talking about service to people, is very good. So that's my answer on that one. I think you were next.
Mr. Thiel, I heard this morning on the radio that you're opposed to both ballot measures 6 and 11. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. Well, let me go. I didn't hear it, so I don't know what they said. I have said that if people were assured that I would be elected governor, they could safely vote against 6 and 11. But if they weren't that certain as I am, they'd have to make a choice, because the governor has said if they both fail, he has no intention at all of trying to come back with another plan. He's already said that. I said that I would. And I would come back incidentally with what I call my Kingdom 6, and I said that also. That may be what you heard, but no, I'm not saying that I'm opposed to voting. Yes, sir.
Don't you think that property tax will just come to the voters each and every time to be voted on by each individual? It's a strange place to attack. Don't you think it would be more fair to get the income tax where we have no say whatsoever about those prices?
Yes, I have to agree with you. That may seem strange from what I said, but understand that I wouldn't have written 6 the way it's written. I wouldn't have written 11 the way it's written. The point is, $200,000 going to be delivered as a 6. And so I think it behooves us to do the best thing we can do and in the best way possible. Understand, I made a specific recommendation in the primary on property tax relief, which in fact shifted to income tax. And I made that recommendation, which also included limitation. I did that in the primary, which is entirely different than 6 and 11. There are many ways to do it. My answer is yes. The point is that we don't have that luxury anymore. I wish we had. We don't have it.
Yes. Mr. Teal, what is your stand on contracting state services out?
Could you hold just a second?
The contractors, I'd like to just recognize the 4 people with the microphones right now, or 5 people with the microphones right now. And I apologize for interrupting.
Sure.
You can ask your customer to be the first.
I'll try to make an answer, sure. Yes.
What is your stand on contracting state services out?
We've gone through that argument almost every session since I've been in the Oregon legislature. I think there's a good balance between the contracting and doing it with state services. And there was a recommendation that we actually, in effect, have a time study to see which is the best way it can be done. I'm not sure it was really successful. I can't answer definitively. I've never been able to answer definitively. I've sat in committees as we've debated that issue. All I can tell you is that I believe there's a place in which state government can do it a great deal better than trying to contract every job out. And then there are times, and of course, in the broadest sense, we've already recognized those. We're talking in the narrow sense now. In the broadest sense, there are times when it's much better to contract it out. Sorry I can't give you a definitive answer, but in all the sessions I've been down there, I've just never been able to find that point at which we ought to contract and not. Let me only say I think there needs to be a balance. I don't remember, probably just taking an order back. As long as I know, I have a plan to ask you a question.
Senator Tia, I was at the conference where Governor Straub gave his speech, and he promised pretty much the same thing that you did, and then he backed out on us. And I'm just wondering, really, how sincere are you about this?
Okay. Yeah, that's... There are people in this room that have dealt with me. Many of them. You want to volunteer to raise your hand? I would be willing to leave my faith, that answer in their hands. I can tell you in 20 years as a legislator, I've never said anything that I didn't mean. I never have. When I say something, I'm not just appealing to an audience. I'm saying it because I believe it. Maybe the best way I can describe it to you is my intense desire, and one of the major reasons I'm running for governor in the state of Oregon, is to deliver the service in the best way possible to people for whom it's intended, and I feel very strong about that. And the second thing is that I want to have Oregonians proud of state government. And I know that in order to achieve both of those objectives, I have to do what I told you. So I'm not just telling you a story, you can depend on it. But if anybody wants to volunteer, I'm going to leave my faith in their hands and that answer in their hands, because they know what I'm saying. I don't say anything that I don't believe in.
Pardon?
Oh, okay. Well, I don't agree with you. I don't blame you. Yes.
Senator Teal, I think the true message of 13 in California and 6 in Oregon is we want to cut in bureaucracy. The cut has to come from this, on top of both, you know, through the middle and lower levels. Since 6 or 11 is probably going to go for sure, what are you going to do to see if the cuts are equal? Like we cut $130,000 person out and maybe leave 2 or 3, $10,000 or $12,000 people on the line. Because we can do the job at the lower levels. How about having the upper level share the cuts work?
I understand exactly. saying, and I really believe in what you're saying. Let me tell you that one of the things that I recall meeting with in the legislature, we were giving percentage raises, and it occurred to me and others that in the percentage basis, the ones at the top level were getting the biggest chunk, and the ones down below, you know, 10% of 1,000, as we found earlier, the ones 10% of 10,000. And so we started to make some adjustments, and I hailed that. I thought that was a good idea, and I thought that was a fair way to approach it. And I agree with you also. I'm going to look at Paul Darman, really, but understand, and I want you to make sure everyone here understands, that as I look at what I want to do and how I'm going to trim budgets, my target will always remain the same, and that is the person for whom that service is designed. And I want to do it in the best way possible. And that's the way I'm going to make my decisions. What's the best way to deliver that service? And you can probably decide what might happen as a result of that. Yes, over here, there, and then over here. And, oh, wait a minute. No, somebody got up extra. Well, I better start over here because these people have been standing.
Senator, if you have a few questions. A number of us met with Governor Straub several months ago to discuss state employee problems. And one of the questions that was posed relative to the tax measures was, would you be in favor if cuts had to be made in cutting back jobs or denying salary increases? And that's my first question. Number two, I guess maybe in a repeat of the previous question, as we're about to enter into collective bargaining, you have a position, specific position, relative to granting a flat pay raise as opposed to a percentage increase.
Well, may I understand your first question? You asked the governor, would he be cutting jobs and salary increases? Is that what you asked?
No. He could be faced with a choice between either granting pay raises and reducing jobs, or keeping the employment level the same and not granting any salary increases, much akin to what happened in California.
My answer, generally, and it has to be that at the present time, is that there's a lot of savings that can be accomplished. Just because one state agency is reporting to another state agency unnecessarily. And I think that's an area of slippage. I would tell you that I've received a considerable amount of mail from you already in ways in which we can save, but none of them, incidentally, so far, none of which has meant letting people go. I'm going to have to recognize that it depends on what plan goes and whether I'm successful in my cleaning up six, but I feel very certain I will be. But presuming the worst, there's no doubt that we're going to have probably, have maybe less of a salary increase. And I'm trying to save you a mix between cutting out jobs and salary increase. I don't think it's one or the other. This is what I'm saying to you. And I would try to accomplish many other things in a more efficient way that would save us money before we get the people and salary increases. Flat pay raise versus percent. That's a little bit more difficult. Here again, I'm not going to look publicly bargaining all the bargaining and not. But I think I would look at what I think is the fairest. Remember, our earlier question was in regard to the top 10% and maybe a higher percent. That never appealed to me, but a flat pay rate uniform may not also be the answer, because a flat pay down at the bottom.